ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अङ्गत्वामनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी. न हि ज्ञानेन सदृशं पवित्रम् इह विद्यते तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धि कालेनात्मनि विन्दते न हि ज्ञानेन सदृशम् पवित्रम् इह विद्यते तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धः कालेनात्मनि विन्दति न हि ज्ञानेन सदृशं पवित्रम् इह विद्यते तत्स्वयं योगसंसिद्धः कालेन आत्मनि विन्दति न हि ज्ञानेन सदृशं pavitram iha vidyate. Pavitram, from pavitra, a purifier, something which purifies is pavitram. Okay? So, pavitram iha vidyate, here in this world, na vidyate, here in this world, na vidyate, iha here, pavitram, there is not, here in this world, a purifier, something which purifies, jnanena sadrisham, equal to knowledge. Mm-hmm. Sadrisham means that which is same as or equal to, governs the instrumental. Mm-hmm. So that which is, we would say in English, that which is equal to knowledge. Okay, so there is no greater purifier in this world than knowledge. There's nothing equal to that. Nothing that can do the same thing. Sadrisham means equal to, or that can do the same. That is the same as knowledge. There's nothing here like that. Tatsvayam yoga samsiddhihi. Yoga samsiddhihi. For the one who is samsiddhi means nishta. So for the one who is established in yoga, okay? So karma yoga means the one who is established in yoga. So you can take karma yoga, because antikarana shuddhi is there, right? That antikarana shuddhi is there. So for the one who is established in yoga, then that tatsvayam, that tatjnanam, that knowledge itself, kalena, in time, with time, rises in the mind. So let me make clear what that means. Vindate means the one who has yoga, just literally, yoga samsiddhi vindate. That one gains that knowledge. That knowledge itself, that one gains in time. Okay. Atmani means in the mind. Remember, because if something's being gained somewhere, you're not gaining knowledge in the atma. The atma, you have to always take what the atma is referring to. If it's referring to the body, if it's referring to the mind, referring to the buddhi, or if it's referring to the atma. So that means Atma, which is Brahman. So the word Atma, just in like in English, it's important to understand this for Sanskritists especially. If the Atma, just like in English, is used reflexively, you know, like if I say, I don't say the body is going to the store, I say I'm going to the store. I don't say my mind is agitated, I say I am agitated. So the self, the sense of self, is always being identified with one upadhi or another. the body, the mind, the sense organs. So you say, I am this or I am that. The mind is agitated, the mind is happy, the mind is itself has antakarana shuddhi. So you can say, if I say, I have antakarana shuddhi, right? So I can be using atma like that. So you always have to see whether, when they use the word atma, whether it's referring to atma, the self, which is Brahman, or if it's being used reflexively to refer to an upadhi. Okay, so that's very common. It comes up all the time in all of the literature and the Bhagavad Gita, all of the Upanishads. You have to see what the context is. So here, actually, these two verses are really often, Swamiji quotes both of these often. Okay, I'm going to spend some time on this verse. It's a really beautiful verse. Knowledge takes care of the fundamental problem. It removes the reason that a person becomes agitated, or the reason, the deep meaning of why a person becomes agitated, or becomes angry, or becomes jealous, or becomes selfish. All of these type of what we call these negative qualities, which nobody likes to be around, and in fact you don't like to have them in yourself because they're painful, nor do you like to be exposed to them in another person. That's because they're painful qualities, they're hurtful qualities. Now, in order to be free of those qualities, really, you know, the person has to feel inside that I am whole and complete. In other words, what is the reason really behind my anger or my agitation? It usually always boils down to, I want something to be different than what it is. In some way or another, my desire template has been messed with. The desire template is, I need this in order to be happy. Right? That's what it is. It's what the whole thing's about. I need this in order to be happy. Now that can has it's got its positive side and its negative side. And they both mean exactly the same thing. I need this in order to be happy. I need to get rid of this in order to be happy. Right? I need to have this to be happy, or I need to be rid of this to be happy. None of the other things, for all of the other things, you're kind of like a jnani. Because they're fine as they are. Because there's no desire there. But where there is a desire, where you have the full template, means I need this in order to be happy, then when anybody is, or anybody or anything, is obstructing that attainment of the happiness, I will feel the appropriate negative emotion. If you're only obstructing a little bit, then I will just dislike you a little bit. If you're being a pain in the butt about it, then I will be irritated or agitated with you. If you're really, really stopping me from having this thing that is important to me, I can feel severe hatred for you, or can even go into loathing and wishing that you just didn't exist because you are stopping me from having something which I actually very much need for my well-being, for me to be whole, for me to be complete. In some way, you are obstructing that. And depending on the way in which you obstruct it will depend on what type of negative emotion is being generated. You know, from just agitation to irritation to dislike to annoyance to hatred to loathing to murderous rage. Really, it's the thing. And the opposite is also when, in reference to the desire template, all of the people and situations that are facilitate my attaining that desire, my fulfilling that desire. All of those people and situations gain positive emotions. What a kind person she is. What a wonderful person he is. He's always so helpful. He's such a good person. You know, he's a saintly person. Goes on and on and on. All kinds of praise and adoration, and what an intelligent person. You know, what a wonderful situation. How could I be so lucky? How could I be so lucky to be in this situation? You only say that about things that are fulfilling the desire template. You're not going to say that if you could care less about the situation. You don't think, oh, I'm so lucky, I'm so happy to be in this situation. You know, it doesn't even occur to you. You're just in the situation. It's nothing. It's neutral. I'm so happy, or I'm neutral, or I'm a little bit happy. It's fine. It's good. Or this is hell. But all of it is in reference to the desire template. Now, if you're in the world of ajnanam, if you're in the world of ignorance, self-ignorance, then there are a lot of things that I can do to kind of damp down this type of the desire template. In other words, I can live an aesthetic life. I can decide, like, desires make me miserable, so I'm just going to try to live an aesthetic life, give up everything I can possibly give up, practice not clinging, because clinging is a problem. The more that I cling, the more I suffer. So I will practice non-clinging. There's no knowledge there. It is a practice. And it's a practice that's effective. That's one. Effective practice. Another effective practice is just the practice of dharma. You know? That I will seek what is pleasurable for me, as every human being does. But my highest authority, what I follow, that I have the most value for, is dharma. Because I have learned that I gain a much deeper happiness by the practice of dharma than I do by the fulfillment of worldly pleasures. And I would never, because of my understanding, there's a certain sophistication of understanding and assimilation of experience there, I understand that it totally does not behoove me to fulfill a desire at the expense of dharma. I can fulfill a desire and enjoy that, but not if it's conflicting with proper behavior. Not if it's conflicting with dharma. And so that also kind of reins in the desire template. You know, it gives me something, a higher set of values that is more important to me than dharma is. Okay? Karma yoga also gives so much shanti, still relative. Karma yoga, when one, not taking into account jnana nishtha, because say that jnana nishtha isn't there, it still gives me relative shanti. It gives shanti to the mind, right? Because I've understood, I'm gaining this teaching, but I really understand for antakarana shuddhi that prasada buddhi, ishvara prasada buddhi, is really gives me a way to pursue my desires and at the same time take the results of my actions as prasada from the Lord. And that practice itself, which is based on knowledge, that practice, there's kartritvam, bhoktritvam, that doership and enjoyership is still there. But that practice gives shanti because I'm always engaged with Ishwara. I'm always in relation to Ishwara. And in that way I accept the results of my actions as prasad. And so that drishti of that prasada buddhi that you have when you're given prasad, having gone to the temple, you know, and the puja is being done at the temple, and then at the end they offer prasadam, you always are there, you'll receive that prasad as the prasad from Ishwara, whatever it is, whether it's drops of water or a little rose petal, you know, or some chandan, some kumkum, you know, or it could be a laddu, or it can be, you know, it's a sweet, or it could be a full meal. To me, that is not what's important. What is important to me is that it's prasadam from Ishwara. So what is important is Ishwara and that relationship, and that gives a tremendous amount of shanti. But still there, because the Kartritvam and Bhoktritvam, the doer, Kartritvam is doership, Bhoktritvam is enjoyership, because that is still there for the karma yogi. That buddhi is still there. It is still, the shanti is still relative. It's relative because it's wonderful and maybe the most that we can expect, perhaps, I don't know, the most that we can expect in terms of sadhana. The non-clinging is very good also. But it's one of the most that we can expect in terms of sadhana for giving relative shanti. Because there's no exceptions to it. Right? Everything is I accept as prasad from the Lord, and so my mind enjoys a certain shanti from that. But my mind, the mind is enjoying the shanti. The mind which itself is subject by its very nature, subject to change. That's the nature of the mind. So it's subject to ashanti. Right? Now, that means that karma yoga buddhi is something that I need to, in a sense, practice. I need to practice it. It's something that is relative. Okay, so now let me just, I'll get back to the karma yoga buddhi and clinging and all of these other things in a minute. Let's look at jnanam. What is the difference? With jnanam, knowledge, self-knowledge, atma jnanam, right? Which is now in this verse said this is the greatest purifier. Why? The nature of your being is ananda. The very nature of you, the conscious being, it is ananda. It is fullness itself, wholeness itself. It is free from kartritvam and bhoktritvam. It is not relative. The mental vritti, antakarana vritti, is relative. It's changing. It's subject to time. It's mitya. Right? Atma is not mitya. Yourself is not mitya. Yourself is always shanti, whether the mind is shanti or not. The condition of the mind is irrelevant to the nature of the atma. The condition of the universe is irrelevant to the nature of the atma. So yourself, the self that you are, is shanti, period. It is shanti, and it has always been shanti. It was shanti before, is shanti now, will always be shanti. Because it's free from time. Now, this self is unknown to the jnani. This self to the ajnani. This... Okay. Oh, that was so confusing. Okay. This self is unknown to the ajnani in a sense. Right? The atma is never unknown. Right? Because the atma is you. So you always know yourself as a conscious being, as a conscious existent being. You always know yourself as me. But for the ajnani, that adhyasa, that superimposition is there. And so it's not just, I don't know myself, the mind. My mind does not know myself as I am. My mind only recognizes myself as one with all of the vrittis that I'm having, all of the thought modifications I'm having. And all of those thought modifications that I'm having exist in this body. So I become this jiva, this body-mind complex, that is an existing entity in this world. That's my situation. And because I am so identified with my mind, and I am a limited being different from you, and my mind is perfectly capable of being miserable. It's capable of sukha and dukkha. Everybody's mind. Everybody's mind. Even the jnani's mind is capable of sukha and dukkha. You can be tired, you can have agitated experiences, you can have happy experiences, you can have sad experiences, all of that. That's just, that is the nature of the mind. Now, for the ajnani, you are that mind. That's you. That mind-body. And so therefore, you must do something to handle this mind so that it is predominantly enjoying peace. The vritti, the nature of the vrittis are predominantly enjoying peace, predominantly enjoying sukha, that you are behaving in such a way as to ward off the dukkha, to ward off the ashanti. That's what you have to do, because you are a changing entity. Sometimes you're happy, sometimes you're sad. Sometimes the world is kind to you, sometimes it's mean to you. And your mind is, you're having to learn how to handle, right, the ups and downs of your being. For the jnani, that isn't the situation at all. I don't have to handle, ever, the ups and downs of my being. Because my being is always the same. It is always shanti. It is always pure. It is always ananda. It is always whole. Independent of what the world is doing, what my body is doing, what the sense organs are doing, what the mind is doing. Okay? That's one thing. That's taking the, it's called, in the next verse we'll see, it's called that para shanti. The shanti that belongs, that is the very swarupa, the very nature of the atma. Okay. So, on that sense, in that way, jnana is the greatest purifier because it gives me that which is pure. There is only one thing that is really pure, which is the atma. In other words, one thing that is really pure means one thing that is not subject to ajnana, one thing that is not subject to kartritvam, bhoktritvam, the doership, not subject to sukha and dukkha, not subject to duality. It's one without a second. And so jnanam is what gives me that which is pure. And because it gives me that which is, it is the only thing that gives me that which is pure, right? It's the only thing that gives me that. The others all give it, everything else, if it's not jnanam, it's going to be something that has to do with action. So it's going to, and this is what all of these things do, whether it be non-clinging or karma yoga or following dharma. What are the four things that karma can give you? It can help you to reach something. You know, it's called opium. It can make you reach something. It can, you know, make you, it can be vikaryam, you know, can modify something, samskaryam. It can make you, you can clean something. Or utpajam, you can create something. That's what you can do with karma. Okay, I can create a better situation for myself. Okay, I can clean my house. I can take a shower and I can do japa. I can do pranayama. I can clean everything up. Okay? I can scrub with samskarya, you know, I can scrub everything. You know? I can go away. I can move out of the dirty situation into a cleaner situation. So many, these are things that I can do. They're practices. I can practice these things. But all of these practices are bound by time. They have to be managed. Right? And they are managing something that is itself bound by time, which is my very mind, my very body. So these purifiers, and they are purifiers, but you have to keep purifying. You have to keep using them. You have to keep modifying. You have to keep reaching. If you reach something, you know, you are different from that thing that you've reached. Right? So somebody can pull you away from it. Or since you're different from it, it can leave you. There's no end to it. You can, when I think of this samskaryam, you know what I think about with this cleaning, purifying? I think about how my mother used to make us clean her silverware. Her silver. Have you ever had to do that? My mother had a lot of silver. All silver, you know, place settings. Silver teapot, silver, you know, platters and all of that type of thing. And whenever we would have company, like on any of the holidays, we had to clean the silver because it had tarnished. Right? And you don't have to clean it once. You have to clean it every time. Every time there's a party, we had to scrub the silver to clean it because it had tarnished. So this is some, to me, this is samskaryam. You know, this is that cleansing. Swamiji will use the example. I'm sorry, but you do have to take a shower every day. you know, if you don't, we will all suffer. You know? That cleansing, you have to, it's not just once. Japa, take japa. Japa is very, very good for for quietening the mind. You know, morning meditation, doing japa, morning meditation, pranayama. It's very good. Sacred also. But you, just by that act, you cleanse the mind. You make the mind very, very quiet. But it only lasts for a while. Right? So these are karmas. They're effective. They're useful. They are helpful. But they are practices. Jnanam is not a practice. Jnanam, knowledge, removes ignorance. And in the removal of the ignorance, you recognize the self that has always been there and will always be there. And that self is free. When the mind recognizes that self, it also gains a freedom that it didn't have before. And the freedom that it gains is the fact that the self that I am is free of it. Right? The mind recognizes that the self that I am, that is its very self, is free of it. And that self is Ananda. That self that I am is Ananda. And that self is the very being, the very truth of the mind, which the mind can never get away from, because it is the very being of the mind. The self is free of the mind, but the mind is not free of the self. The self can't go anywhere that's away from that mind. And so the mind now has found, discovered, the source, the sthana, the adhisthana, of what it has been always seeking in samsara, the desire template. I want this so that I can be happy. But this has always been, because of ajnanam, it has always been something within samsara, whether it be physical objects that I perceive with my sense organs, whether it be attitudes, values, dharma, these all still exist within duality, within samsara, as beautiful as they may be. They still exist within samsara. They still need to be practiced. They still need to be managed. Even my relationship with Ishvara, for an ajnani, is a dual relationship. Ishvara is out here. I am here. Right? So that has to be managed. Ishvara can go away from me. Right? So all of that is what comes to an end. That's all ajnana-based thinking. And so the mind now enjoys itself, from the standpoint of the mind, an immutable shanti. And the immutable shanti that it enjoys is the swarupa of myself. Right? And so now, recognizing that, all of this, for that mind, that jnani mind, is mitya. All of it is mitya. Means all of it has myself for its truth. All of this is mitya, this body is mitya, the sense organs are mitya, the thoughts and moods and emotions of the mind are mitya, the antakarana is mitya, the whole thing is mitya. The satyam is impervious to mitya. And so the mind, enjoying the satyam of my being, lives in this world. How can that be without jnanam? It can't be without jnanam, because it already always has been. The one that is having the problem is the one that doesn't know. And so not knowing, no amount of activity, no amount of reaching or cleaning or purifying or modifying is going to do anything except give you time-bound shanti. And so even though these things from karma yoga on do give shanti, can give shanti, it gives shanti which is relative and temporary. Whereas jnanam gives shanti which is free from time. Because the swarupa of oneself is free from time, and that's what the jnanam gives to the antakarana, removes the ignorance. So there is no greater freedom. So then in the second line, what he says, for the one who has this karma yoga buddhi, means, so karma yoga becomes, other than, with that, now we're talking about kind of that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, where I have both what we've talked about, what Krishna and what the Lord has talked about in all these previous verses. I see as with a kartratvam and bhoktratvam, as I'm a mumukshu, as I'm gaining knowledge, I appreciate all of this. I have that Ishvara Arpana Buddhi. I appreciate everything as prasada from the Lord. I have that spirit from the previous verses of yajna. Yajna means everything that I do really is, in a sense, it's a worship of the Lord. It's in relationship to Ishvara. Everything that I do, even my breath, everything that I do is in that relationship. And I have for Karmayoga Buddhi, so I have that prasada Buddhi, and I have what we call kaushalam. Means I have learned appropriate behavior. I understand dharma. I know how to behave appropriately. I have proper values. It's also very important. I have that proper values and Ishwarapana Buddhi. That gives me that yoga samsiddhi. So I'm established in karma yoga. That means relatively I'm operating in the world in a dharmic way. For that person, as knowledge takes place, because remember, the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is teaching, right, knowledge to Arjuna. So that he's teaching karma yoga to Arjuna, and he tells Arjuna, it's better for you, it's better for not just for you, but for a seeker to stay in the world. Later you'll say, you stay in the world, and do your karma, do your duty, and gain this knowledge, gain nishta in this knowledge, stay in the world. Right? So, for the person who becomes proficient, gains kaushalam, and gains that karma yoga buddhi, so the relative shanti is there, for that person who's exposed to this knowledge, that knowledge itself will take over the mind, will itself rise in the mind. That knowledge itself will come to fruition in the mind. Why? Because the knowledge is of yourself, right? The mind is not distant from the self. And so this mind that is now gaining relative shanti becomes more and more available to receive this teaching, to actually see what the teacher is saying, to actually recognize what the teacher is saying, and be able to own it up, because the mind is enjoying a relative shanti now because of dharma, because karma yoga buddhi, and so it no longer has to spend so much energy trying to attain a relative abiding peace. That's the thing to understand. The antakarna, your mind, the dharmic mind that is worked through, you know, we're in Kali Yuga. It's important to understand we are in Kali Yuga. Being in Kali Yuga means that we're all like walking underwater in terms of adharma. There's too much adharma in the society. There's too much adharma in just family life. There's too much pain that is caused by society and family upbringing for us not to have to do a lot of sadhana to just to take care of our unconscious and our situation, and to find a way to live in a society where that is not squeaky clean in terms of adharma. It's not squeaky clean at all. In fact, it's getting worse and worse and worse in some ways. You know, it's getting very, very hard. So to be able to live in that society, to grow up in that society, to have to work through all of the pain of disrupted families and that type of thing, that takes work. It takes work, and it takes some time, and it takes skill. This is where this idea of kaushalam comes in. You know, even with knowledge, and say for the teachers of this knowledge, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, it says, when in doubt, go to a teacher, a wise person of your era. Because there are things in every era. There are different purvapakshas, there are different doubts, different problems. There are different social problems. There's different familial problems. There's different things that our mind is suffering from, you know, that need to be handled in different ways. You know, and so what are those? Some of these things are relative. They have relative solutions that we still need to employ. We need to employ relevant solutions to some of these type of problems that involve dharma and adharma and things that create a lot of pain for individuals. And so to be able to bring about that relative shanti so that the mind has some inner peace, so that inner peace can resolve and be able to rest in a peace that is free from relativity. You know, you have to be able to have a mind that has enough relative peace for that knowledge to be meaningful. So that all of it has to be taught, not just part of it. That whole thing has to be understood. That's why the Karma Yoga is important. And Shankara brings in, and the Lord brings in also, Kaushalam. Kaushalam means, you know, it means skill. It means skillfulness in action. What does that mean? It means that all of these different things that we have to do and manage in our life, to know how to do that, how to manage those things in a way that gives me inner strength and well-being, relatively. And so we have to learn all of that. And then we gain strength in that, and that mind then, as that mind is exposed to this knowledge naturally takes root in this mind. That's why it says tet swayam, jnanam swayam. This knowledge itself, right, rises up in this mind. For who? The one who has the yoga samsiddhi. Means that karma yoga buddhi, right? That maturity of mind is there. And so what we say is, this maturity of mind and jnanam help each other. The knowledge is the greatest purifier. So it also helps the mind mature in this karma yoga buddhi. And as the mind matures, the knowledge becomes more clear. As the knowledge becomes more clear, the mind becomes more free. And so it's like that. Both are helping each other, right? Until the mind says, oh, okay. Okay. That saying okay, that requires a lot of maturity. It means there's a level of vairagya there, you know? Okay means it's a pranam to Ishwara. That okay is, it's a pranam to Ishwara. An Ishwara, that means it's a pranam to Ishwara in which I recognize that myself is Ishwara. That's how it resolves. This body, mind, sense organs become part of Ishwara. My prarabdha karma is Ishwara. The prarabdha karma, the whole prarabdha karma is Ishwara. This body, mind, sense organs, the ahankara, all of it is Ishwara. The atma is Ishwara. Right? So I am Ishwara. Once the atma is Ishwara, the body, mind, sense organs, creation is Ishwara, then there is nothing but Ishwara. Right? And so what about the jnani, the buddhi, the one who knows that? There is nothing here but Ishwara, and I am that Ishwara because there is only Ishwara. If there is only Ishwara, then either I'm not here or I am Ishwara. Right? That's a wonderful thing to contemplate on that.
Say it again.
If there is only Ishwara, this creation, the creation that includes this body, the mind, the sense organs, the ahankara, that includes all duality is Ishwara, and the Atma is Ishwara, right? The Atma, which is Brahman, is Ishwara. Then there is only Ishwara. Right? The subject object is Ishwara. That's all there is Ishwara. Then you can say, therefore, I am Ishwara. Because there is nothing else. So either you're Ishwara or you're not anything. Either you're Ishwara or you're not here. It's because there is only Ishwara. You see? But that requires some a level of maturity, a level of understanding. But say, when that understanding is there, then it's in Panchadashi, as we were looking at, what is there, if everything is Ishwara, if I am Ishwara, then if that's my buddhi, then where is the complaint? It's when I'm a jiva, that needs the desire template to be whole, right? I need this to be whole is what it amounts to, right? Then there's a lot of room for complaint, right? Because I'm not whole. And in order to become whole, I have to add some things to me because I'm not whole. But there's no end to what I could add because there could be all something more I could add. You can't become whole in terms of addition and subtraction because there's always something else. That's where wealthy, wealthy people discover this. They don't have quite enough because there's somebody who's wealthier. There's somebody who has more. You know, even in terms of power, there's somebody who has more power. You have a lot of power, but you're always a small fish in a big pond. You say it's better to be, you know, a big fish in a little pond than a big fish in a big pond, or however that goes. It's just impossible. So how to find your wholeness? How to find the wholeness? It's an infinite pursuit that has no end to it. And so there's no satisfaction there. You know, we're never happy with who we are. We're never happy with what we have. We can have certain. We need a little bit more. How is that going to resolve? It resolves in either you can say, I am the whole, or it doesn't resolve. That's what it is. Because Maya is mitya, this creation, it's infinite. If you're collecting, there's no end to the collection. And it's all bound by time, so either you are whole, or you're infinitely sorrowful. You are the whole, or you're infinitely incomplete. There is no solution, right? Because the world is infinite. So, what's infinite? N plus one, infinite. Infinite minus one, infinite. You can't do anything about it. But say you recognize I am the whole, then you have a choice of either saying for a few minutes, "Well, I'm not the whole today. I'm not the whole today. I need this and this and this and this." You know? Or you say, I'm the whole and I don't really need anything. But to say I'm the whole and I don't really need anything, you can't just say that as words. You have to recognize the truth of it. That in fact is the reality. That my being is whole and complete. But you have to recognize it. That's just not it's not a belief. You have to recognize it. That is satya, mitya, all of that becomes so important. All of that resolution takes place through knowledge. So now he says, okay, how does this knowledge take place? This is the next really famous verse.
Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Tatparasanyatendriyaha. Tatparasanyatendriyaha. Jnanam labdhva param shantim. Jnanam labdhva param shantim. Acharenati gacchati. Acharenati gacchati. Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. Tat paraha sanyata indriyaha. Compound. Sanyata indriyaha. Jnanam labdhva shant param shantim. Acharena adigachati.
So the question is, okay, how does one gain this knowledge then? Who gains it? Who can gain this knowledge, this great purifier? What is that? He says, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. These three little words are told all the time. The one who has Shraddha gains this knowledge. Simple. The one who has Shraddha gains this knowledge. But that person who has Shraddha, that person will gain that knowledge if that person is Tatparaha. Tatparaha means one for whom this knowledge is primary. Paraha means supreme. The one for whom the jnana is primary, the most important thing. You say, what's tatparaha? What is tatparaha for you? It means what is the central focus of your life, of your being? What is most important to you in your life? So, the shraddhavan labhate jnanam, the one who has shraddha, gains this knowledge. If they are tatparaha, if this knowledge is what is central to them? What is primary to them? And then, Sanyata Indriyaha. And if that person has control over their sense organs, the Indriyas are the Karma Indriyas, the Jnana Indriyas, the organ sense organs and organs of action, and their mind, that which he said over and over through the Gita. If that person has control of their senses, means can decide, can say yes, can say no, shama dhamma, right? Person can say, if the person has shama and dhamma, this is a huge thing, really. Shama means that as the thoughts and feelings are coming into my mind, that I have a choice of how I respond to those thoughts and feelings. I can entertain them. I can let them go. That's shama. When shama doesn't work, in other words, the thought or the mood or the emotion has grabbed me, and now I can't let it go because it's hanging on to me. It's got me in a chokehold. I can say, go, go.
I let go.
Please, uncle. And it doesn't hear me. When it's becoming embodied like that, you know, it's in the body. You see, it's grabbed you. You can say, please go, go. And then you realize it's not going. You know? Then, but your ability then to contain that, to be with it, without acting out, to know how to handle it, to be with those type of moods and emotions, without acting them out, like say if say something puts you into a rage. Someone hurts you, says something, puts you into a rage, you are furious. Are you able to hold it and be with that? Do you have kaushalam? Do you know how to act? Do you know how to be with that in a way to help it? That's kaushalam. The Dhamma, though, is your being able to have some objectivity toward that overwhelm. If you have the objectivity toward the overwhelm, right? Then you have a choice of whether or not you act it out. Or as a person is overwhelmed with rage that doesn't have the Dhamma, or verbal. And who knows? Who knows? When you're overwhelmed by an emotion and you don't have the Dhamma to be able to contain it, then you don't have the Dhamma to contain it. Right? That's what we call loss of, in psychology we call it loss of impulse control. You're capable of doing anything because there's nobody home. There's nobody there anymore. So Dhamma, I think that it's interesting to bring into the Shama and Dhamma that kaushalam means, because if the shama is there, you don't have a problem. That means that you can just let the thought go. If you can let the thought go, you can let it go. It is, the thought is not a problem for you. The emotion is not a problem. You can say, it's okay. Boom, it just goes. Fine. It's just like scenery. It's like one of the billions of thoughts you have. It just passes through. No problem. So shama there. But when you need the Dhamma, means that the mind has overwhelmed you in one way or another, then kaushalam is important. What kaushalam is your skill, like parenting skill. Skill of how to be with the mind when it's hurting like this, or when it's enraged, or when it's angry. It's not just simply a matter of containment, not acting out. It's that kaushalam, how to be with that to help it to calm down, to help it to resolve itself. That's so important. So if that's shama and dhamma, and add kaushalam as part of dhamma, just to be complete about it, that's what they mean by this samyata indriyaha. These indriyas are under control, right? Because you can say yes or no. And if the mind is acting up, you know how to be with it. You know how to be with your unconscious, all of this. So if that is there, then the mind is not taking you away on a ride. The buddhi is operational, right? The buddhi is operational. Your value system is operational. Okay? If that is there, if the mumukshutvam is there, the jignasa, mumukshutvam means, you know, I have recognized, say, if the mumukshutvam, you know, if we think of this sadhana chatushtaya, this fourfold sadhana, this fourfold means if the mumukshutvam, the desire for liberation is there, that means viveka is there, vairagya is there. Mumukshutvam can't be there without viveka and vairagya, right? So if the discrimination is there, if the vairagya, that dispassion that is born of that discrimination is there, that gives you the mumukshutvam, then that tatparaha is there. Means this becomes the most important thing to me. Why? Because I have recognized that the world cannot solve this fundamental problem. There is nothing in the creation that can solve the fundamental problem of my wholeness. It is not because it's anything wrong with the creation, it's just not capable of doing this. Kind of like blood from a stone. Stones don't have blood, so they can't give blood. It's not the stone's fault. It just doesn't have the blood to give. Okay? The universe does not have the ananda to give. It does not have in itself the wholeness to give. It's not its swarup, it's not its nature. And so, what about when I recognize that? That is the plight of the mumukshu, to recognize this universe can't give me what I fundamentally seek. It's not capable of it. That's what turns me into a mumukshu, right? If I still believe that the universe, that there's someone, something, some situation in the universe that can solve this fundamental problem, I'm not a mumukshu, in fact, because I still have an out. Mumukshu is the one that does not have an out, that is recognized as viveka and vairagya are real. You can have relative happiness, relative pleasure, but all of it is time bound. And so I cannot rest in relative ananda, the ananda that can end at any minute, the well-being that can end at any minute. I would like to just relax and be able to give these any minutes up, just to be able to say, all is well with me, the problem's over, I don't have to worry about it anymore. The universe can never give me that. That person's a mumukshu. When that person, the mumukshu, has been exposed to knowledge, to the Upanishad, to the Vedanta, in the context of what we're doing, does Shraddha strike? In other words, when you hear it, does that in your mind, does your mind say, let me know this. Let me understand this. I want to understand this. Does it strike like that? Where I want to know this. That's Shraddha. It doesn't mean I want to believe this. It means I want to know. I want to know this. If that, and there's an intensity there, this is what I want to know. And this teacher, whoever the teacher is, this teacher is fine. Otherwise, that teacher's an obstruction. I want to know this, not from this person. So the Shraddha has to be, this teacher is fine, this knowledge is what I want to know. With that, because then with that, the mind is not the teacher and the student themselves and the antakarna of the mind is not, there's nothing obstructing the flow of that knowledge. Right? Because otherwise the mind can't really be available because I want to know but not that. I want to know but not from that person. So there's no flow there. So you need the mind that's available. You need the mumukshutvam, tatparaha. This has to be primary. That means you've recognized the problem, the situation, and the Shraddha. If those three things are there, this knowledge can't but take place. Because the mind is available for it. The pramana is there. That's the Shraddha. Shraddha is toward both the what we call upadesha, the acharya, and upadesha. Right? Shraddha toward the Acharya and the Upadesha. Acharya is the teacher, Upadesha is the teaching. Okay? So if the Shraddha is there, that means then the Pramana, which is coming through the teacher, is operational. The Pramana is there, that Samyata Indriya, the sense organs are available, right? Sense organs are under control, they're available, the mind sense organs, and the person's a mumukshu. You can have Shraddha but not be a mumukshu. There's a lot of people who have Shraddha in the Vedas, in their guru, in the Upanishads, and they'll go later, you know. When I'm a mumukshu, I will go.
Retirement.
I'll go to get knowledge from my teacher. You know, when I'm a mumukshu, I'm not a mumukshu yet. Talk like that. And Swamiji will say, yeah, it's fine. You can just come. You come when you want. It's no problem. It's no problem. Yeah. The key is Shraddha, though. Because with the Shraddha, you know, that person who becomes a mumukshu has a place to go. The person who has Shraddha and Tattaraha, but doesn't have this control of the mind, no problem. You've got your guru, you've got your teaching, you've got your mumukshutvam, and there are plenty of sadhanas for gaining the antakarana shuddhi with that purity of mind and antakarana naishchalya, the steadiness of mind. That'll come in time, and it's not a problem. So really it boils down to the Shraddha. If the Shraddha, so that's why often I'll just quote that, Shraddhavan Labhate Jnanam, because they believe Ishwara Nugraha, the grace of the Lord, the grace of the Guru, the grace of the teaching itself, all of these things will come if that Shraddha is there. So Shraddha is very, very sacred. In fact, it's looked at as, you know, just that's tremendous punya. It's like a tremendous grace from the Lord, because why should you have Shraddha? Why should you have it?
Yeah.
Because, you see, when you go to a teacher or to a teaching, you don't know. It's not like you go as a jnani. You go to become a jnani. You go to gain knowledge. You don't go with knowledge. So you don't really know. You don't know what it even means to be liberated or to be free. You may feel bound, but you couldn't say, I feel bound and this is what it means to be free. You don't know. And so, to have Shraddha, to have something inside of you say, this is what I want. That's punya. Because there's no reason for you to. You could as well say, this isn't what I want. See what I mean? You could as well say that. Because you don't know. So it's considered tremendous. Tremendous grace, and there's all these Upanishads will all in one way or another they'll be praising they praise the teacher. The Upanishads, it's called Artavada. There's a praise involved. They praise the Sisha, they praise the student, they praise the teacher, they praise the Sampradaya, they praise the teaching, they praise Ishwara for giving us this teaching. All of it, you know, and there'll be so many prayers and shlokas all in honor of the, really if you think about what a miracle it is, praising the existence of this knowledge that it is even there at all. That this knowledge would even exist in the creation. I remember telling Swamiji one time, at the beginning when I was in, we were in Rishikesh, I just told him what a huge relief it was that this knowledge existed. Mm. That there was such a thing as a guru, that there really was such a thing. Because, of course, I've heard this word, you know, guru and all of that. But that there really was such a thing. That there was this teaching. That there was such a thing as a guru. And I said, that there is this knowledge means there is God. If there is this knowledge, there is God. Because how could, you know, how could, if there wasn't this knowledge, how could there be a God? If you really think of that. So anyway, it was a very insightful for me at the time.
You were 21.
But I saw it, actually. I saw the very beauty of it. There would, Ishwara has, there's knowledge has to be there if there is Ishwara. You know? And this knowledge is there, and so there is Ishwara. Mm. I kind of understood that connection. It's very, very nice. As long as you like that. You saw that too. But that there should be a pramana. That it should exist. And the thing is, as you gain this knowledge, the gaining of this knowledge itself is the validation that this knowledge exists. Because you gain this knowledge. And the knowledge that you gain has a pala. It has a result. It's not like you gain this knowledge and nothing happens. You gain this knowledge and it makes all the difference in the world. That is the jnana, that is the pala to this knowledge. It's not like you gain it and then nothing is different. That's why that removal of jnanam, that's why we use the 10th man story, the rope snake, to show the removal of jnanam makes a huge difference. And then your experience of life, if the knowledge is true, then your experience of life on every aspect continues to validate that knowledge, because experience validates truth. Experience destroys ignorance, because at some point it's going to break through. Right? Your experience, your understanding of an experience will not match the experience. At some point the experience, the actuality of the experience will crush your false conception of the experience. But if your conception of the experience is true to what it actually is, there is nothing that can happen in the world that can do anything except deepen your understanding, because your understanding is correct. And so that's why if the fruit of something which is true goes on blessing and blessing and blessing and unfolding more deeply and deeply and deeply, and the freedom that you recognize as yourself in reference to your mind, your body, your sense organs, and the creation, you become freer and freer and freer and freer in terms of the upadhi's understanding. Yourself doesn't become freer, freer, freer. Yourself is what it is. But your understanding of that from the standpoint of the upadhi, from the standpoint of the mind, the sense organs, the body, and Ishwara, the creation, the connections are infinite. So the appreciation of reality is something that goes on deepening and deepening and deepening, and deepening your own knowledge, because your knowledge is true to reality. That's what makes knowledge true. We say this word prama, when we talk of the word for knowledge is prama. Prama means that which is the knowledge which is true to the reality. Right? When we use the word prama, then we use the word jnanam differently, and we're holding these two words together. Then we use the word jnanam as cognition. A cognition can be true or false. Like the cognition of a snake is still experienced. It's a cognition that takes place in the mind. It's mithyajnanam, false cognition. Okay? So the way we cognize the world and respond to the world is usually mithyajnanam. It's a false cognition. It's not true to the way the world is. Prama, which is born knowledge, which is born of pramana, of a means of knowledge. When we use the word prama, we mean that the cognition, the understanding, is true to the reality. Right? And that prama can't be negated. So in the end, there is only one prama, and that's atmajnanam. In relative reality, we have relative knowledge, you know, and we'll talk about prama in terms of my seeing the rope is prama, my seeing the snake is just a cognition, right? So we talk about it, but in that way. But in the end, we say, really, this cognition of the rope also is mithyajnanam. Because we take that to be real. Where, in fact, the only thing that is really there is the one vastu, which is the Atma. So, anyway, I have to stop now.
Oh, you said a lot to
me. Yeah. Big verses. Just take a minute. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.